This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. It's good to be back. We have an interesting guest tonight, and one of the reasons that makes this guest so interesting is the fact that there is such an incredible hunger for this type of knowledge. There is a reasonable case that can be made for many who have dedicated a serious amount of research time to the study of ufology. And one of the things, the first one is that the phenomena is a true ongoing mystery and is deserving of serious study. Number two, how it has happened that even good, open-minded scientists have been thrown off the subject. Three, that the extraterrestrial hypotheses, ETH, may be able to serve as a working model for what is going on, but not in any simple-minded form. And four, that the field is almost impossible to study in any conservative, physical type of way, barring certain cases of close encounters. Our guest tonight is a gentleman that has delved in this type of work for quite some time. Joe Montaldo is the founder and national director and spokesman for ICAR, I-C-A-R, the International Community for Alien Research. Joe was originally affiliated with MUFON as an investigator and became somewhat disenchanted with the lack of information being shared with the public. And I think we'll go from there. Joe, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with MUFON and what led you to what you do now?
Well, you know, it was very an investment. When I had been with MUFON a few years, I was a research director for him, and my wife, Linda, was she did scientific analysis work for him. And we'd been with him a while, and you know, I had been talking with Walt Anders, and he's a really good researcher, and they were really doing a good job. And then all of a sudden, they started bringing in a lot of new people in the organization, which was fine. I mean, you know, new blood's always a good thing. But I noticed we were sending in reports on a regular basis, and we weren't even getting responses. Not even a response if they even got the letter, because you know, we were using snail mail back in the day. It was before email, and we were damn, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, we were sending out regular mail, and we weren't even getting replies back, not even a phone call, not any kind of courtesy that says, hey, you know, we received your mail or so forth. So occasionally, about every few months, I'd call in, and I'd like to talk to somebody about, you know, some of the caseload we were doing, some of the stuff, because I was still getting assignments, but I wasn't getting any feedback from anything we were doing, any of the research we were doing. It was like everything we did was going into a black hole, and it was really, really starting to annoy me. So I started calling around asking some of my other MUFON friends, are you having the same problem? Pretty much every researcher I talked to and most of the state directors I talked to said, yes, the same thing. You know, we're sending stuff in, we're not getting any responses. So I got together with a group of them. It was about eight or nine of them, and we did the first ever abduction study. We found, we looked over and found a total of 5,000 cases, and this was about 20 years ago, and went through all of them to see what we could find, where there was commonalities and similarities and stuff like that. Well, we were going to present this to MUFON, you know, for their database and all the information. And when I called them and asked them, they said, well, no, if it has anything military involved or anything like that in it, or a couple other things that was in it, they didn't have anything to do with it. They just wanted strictly UFO stuff. I was like, okay, well, that's fine. So that was pretty much it for me. I'm like, well, we're going to just skip the whole phenomena that's going on here, because my point always was, you can only get so much information chasing lights in the sky. Unless you physically catch ET, you're not going to get much information. You know, you might get some good pictures every once in a while, some decent video, but you're not going to get any real answers. You're not going to find out why they're coming here, what are they doing, why are they so much further along than we are. Things like that can only be answered by them or someone that's in contact with them.
Can I ask you how ICAR is different from MUFON in this respect?
Well, ICAR is much different than MUFON is in a lot of respects. One, we don't have 2,000 members. We have 40,000 members. That right off the bat gives us quite a bit more reach and grab. But what we do is we work hand in hand with the individuals. Like with hypnosis, this is a good example. Most organizations out there that use hypnosis use it very haphazardly. We have very strict guidelines, very strict rules. The very first time anyone's regressed in the organization, the only thing that's going to happen is, and by the way, we videotape everything and we run voice stress analysis and facial recognition with the hypnosis. So it's a much different beast. And we go through and we ask them, will you tell us the experience you had on October 9th, 1989? And that's all we're going to ask. And we will have them recount it from start to finish and then from finish to start. We will stop. We will go through all the video with them. We will sit down and formulate a line of questioning that doesn't use words like alien or spaceship or ETs or anything. Because really, I need them to give me what they are seeing. Not what I think they're seeing, but what they're actually seeing. So if I interject in any way using any of those words, I'm just leading the witness. Like I say, well, what kind of alien? Okay, well, we just assumed it's an alien. It could have been government. It could have been demon. I mean, there's a whole host of things it could have been. So I want them to really describe what it is. Well, in MUFON's case, they never did research like that. Oh, well, let's regress. Well, how many aliens did you see? And what color was the flying saucer? Well, I mean, come on. You've pretty much ruined any evidence you were going to get out of that case at that point. So we have much stricter guidelines, and we are the only organization that requires all of our directors to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So anything that's told to any member of our organization that's, you know, that has anything to do with research is bound by a legally binding non-disclosure agreement.
Let me ask you something, Joe. Isn't the whole idea to get it out to the public instead of binding people with non-disclosure contracts?
Well, it is. It's important to get it out to the public, but it's also important to protect the people that are giving you the information because, frankly, a lot of this can destroy lives and careers and so on. I mean, you know, we work with a lot of people. What most people don't realize, everybody thinks when they hear something about abductions or contactees, they instantly think some flaky, crazy guy, you know, that lives out in the middle of the woods somewhere. But that's not true. We have politicians, lawyers, doctors, scientists. I mean, there are two different doctors working with us right now on the blood type studies that are contactees, both of them, big time, big careers. you know, stuff like this, and we got policemen, firemen, engineers. You pretty much name it, every walk of life is represented inside of our organization. And those people have to be protected. And then there's a thing about giving out too much information. We have what we call criteria, so that we'll only go so far. We'll give out enough information for anybody who may have had a contact to be able to legitimately contact us and know that we know what we're talking about, but not enough that every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes along can fool us. It's one of the reasons we spent the last 30 years establishing a hardcore set of abduction criteria for the major players an alien abduction, and it's something no other organization's ever done. No one's ever done what we're doing right now. The blood type study alone has helped us to isolate particular blood types that they seem to favor. You know, it's a very interesting thing. But
let me ask you, of these blood types, what is it that when you say they seem to favor it, in what way are they favoring it? Is this based on abductions, based on the blood sampling, or any kind of testing done by ET on humans?
Well, what it is initially we thought that when we went through all the different contactees that contact the organization and other organizations, because this is an ongoing project with many orgs, we figured we would find the sampling to be the same as it is in life. 38%, you know, O positive, 36% A positive, so on and so forth, you know, with 15% Rh negative, that's the normal of the population. So that's what we figured we would find, but that's not what we found. What we found is that 68% of all contactees are Rh negative. And out of that 68%, almost 70% of them are O negative, which is very interesting because first off, Rh negative just popped up around 25,000 years ago. It's a mutation, and it was a bad mutation because it kills babies. You remember everybody used to have to get blood tests because A and negative and positive didn't mix. The babies weren't going to be born. It was going to be a problem. This was something that was going on. There was even a special shot and gene developed just for this therapy. So there's no way nature did this because it wasn't something that was going to help in nature. Also, O negative is the only universal donor there is on the planet. Everyone on the planet can take O negative, but O negative can only take O negative. It's also the purest strain of blood on the planet. So I find it mighty coincidental that the purest blood on the planet is also the ones the aliens abduct the most. That's a big coincidence there. You've got to kind of go, oh, wait a minute.
Something interesting considering my son is O negative.
Is he green-eyed?
No.
All right.
No.
That's a good thing. No, it doesn't really matter, but I was just picking on you there.
Just interesting when you said that. But let me ask you, Joe, out of this information that you're gathering, and I happen to believe that this is extremely vital information, I believe in the presence of extraterrestrial life and the intervention of them in our systems, in our societies. Do I have any proof? No, but I believe I base my proof on, just a minute ago you said that some of your statistics were 40, you had like 40,000 people working, and you had thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces of evidence or sightings or whatever to prove. Now, if I'm not mistaken, in science, if you have over 10,000 of any one such thing, then they consider that as proof of its existence. Why, in the case of alien extraterrestrials or UFOs, is it going against the grain of science?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've talked to many scientists about this, and they tend to get their feathers ruffled. It's kind of like comparison Mars. 20 years ago, we all said there was water on Mars and probably some type of atmosphere, maybe even moderate temperatures. Every scientist on the planet said that wasn't true. Of course, today we know that it is true, that Mars does have water and Mars does have a moderate temperature, much more so than we did. Science, for some reason, is very arrogant in itself, and it thinks that it knows everything when science is usually more wrong than it is right. It takes... You know, science is trial and error. You usually mess up 50 times before you get something right. And in all fairness, some of the greatest inventions on the planet came by accident. So you got to wonder why they're so stringent on this, especially with the amount of evidence. Now, if it was just me and science was going around, blah, 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 I'd say, okay, well, you know, I'm nobody. What does it matter? But you've got astronauts. I mean, what, you have 42 to date that have come forward and said they've seen something flying around in the skies or something had happened. I mean, you've had Apollo, Gemini, Mercury, and shuttle astronauts come forward. I mean, some of the greatest names in the field have come forward and said, yes, the planet's being visited. No ifs, ands, about. We've seen things in space that we do not have that is not our technology. Not just American astronauts. Russian astronauts have also said this. So I'm kind of like, why are they fighting this so hard? I mean, what is the resistance to this? Well, one, anybody with that kind of technology is going to make our scientists look ignorant. Let's just be honest about it. They have gone from the top of the food chain to the bottom of the food chain. If ET existence is ever proven to be real on this planet and we have any interaction with them, our scientists have gone from the top of the food chain to the bottom of the food chain now. Because really what they think is not correct. They really don't know what they're talking about, and these guys do. So they don't even want to go there. Plus, they have fought this for so long and so many centuries now that it's kind of just embedded. And I've asked many scientists, I said, let me ask you something. I said, if you were driving down the highway and you seen somebody robbing a convenience store and you got them on videotape and the police came and you went to court, now this person could go to prison because of your eyewitness and videotape. He said, yeah, that's the way it should be. I said, all right, let me say you're driving along. You see the robbery going on, but while you see the robbery, you happen to see a saucer above the store and you videotape it. Well, now you're crazy. Why is that? And he paused and he was like, well, there's no real reason for that. I said, well, why is it? I said, that's what you were just telling me. And every time I ask a scientist, they just get a look. They're like, I don't have an answer for that because there is none. If you can put someone to death in the United States with eyewitness testimony and videotape, that is considered outstanding, credible evidence in this country. So when you have a group of people at a place that's got sightings, not just one videotape, but several with several eyewitnesses, why are they crazy? Because if they were taping someone murdering somebody, they would be going to prison. So what's the difference? It's the same people with the same cameras.
Well, we do have a question that's kind of related to all of this right now. So before we move on, I'd like to ask a question from Skunky in Georgia.
I like that name.
And he asks, what's Joe's opinion on GMOs? GMO creations, genetically modified, I think, creations. What is your opinion about that?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question in itself, and that's like a little can of worms there, because recently the United States government put out a thing about they're trying to learn how to upload your mind, what's in your head, into a computer, because they have learned that they can grow genetically enhanced clone bodies and upload the consciousness from one to the other. Now, this is something contactees say aliens do all the time.
Wow, that's interesting.
So the government is working on this. And this, by the way, this is not a top secret project, guys and girls. They have actually gone public with this. They're trying to find a way. See, what they're saying is like, now this is the guys it's under, by the way. They're saying like if someone had cancer or a bad heart or what have you, that it should be possible to upload the essence of who you are from one body to another, you know, a clean slate. In other words, the other bodies, there's nothing in the brain, and you just upload it to the other one, and then you live there. Now, it sounds great, and I'm sure in a few hundred years it might be something that we can whip, maybe sooner. I don't know where our actual technological levels are with our government right now. Sometimes I think they're quite high, and sometimes I look around and say, no, they're a bunch of morons. So I'm not exactly sure where it is. But it is a project that they are working on. And this all started with a gentleman who had implanted a microchip in his head to record memories. And every scientist on the planet, by the way, said, this will never work. This is impossible. And guess what? It recorded his memories. So it kind of, you know, it's one of those things. Science just has to be science. And, you know, they want things to fall a particular way at a particular time under particular guidelines. But when technology is far beyond us, it's not going to work that way. We're not on that level of education yet. I mean, we hear most scientists say that fast and light travel is impossible. Einstein didn't say that. Einstein said wormholes are real. And everything else Einstein has said was real has come to pass now. So with wormholes being one of the, and we have micro wormholes, we even know about those. He says it's possible to travel between wormholes. So even science right there allows for us to do it, but modern day science doesn't want to touch that. But what modern day science doesn't want you to know and everybody else to know, that our galaxy is only 100,000 light years across. Okay, oh wow, Joe, only 100,000 light years. Well, yeah, we're planning on living 3 or 4 billion years. At half of light speed, which we can already achieve today, we have the technology today to achieve half of light speed, we can map our galaxy in 200,000 years with no problem at all, establishing colonies, setting up stepping stones. In a billion years, not only could we have colonized and think, we could actually have living worlds in several hundred locations around the known galaxy. In 2 billion years, we could have colonized several hundred to several thousand solar systems, because men breed like rabbits. So the thing about it is here, why is it so hard for them to understand that with even the limited technology we have today, we could start doing it? So you got to wonder, why do they fight it? They're scared. That's all it is. They just don't want to be the dumb guy in the block.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, Joe. What is it that we have learned so far?
Well, if according to MUFON, we've learned that the planet has UFOs. According to us, we learned that the planet's been being visited for quite some time. Now, this isn't something that started recently. This goes back way beyond even the Sumerians. You'll find this. Matter of fact, just recently I was sent a picture. Most people aren't aware that during the tsunami before the last one, it uncovered some sunken cities off the coast of India, which turned out to be roughly around 10,000 years old, right around 12,500 BC is when these cities existed. Now, remember, Sumeria is supposed to be the first civilized anything on the planet, but the Egyptians following real close. Well, that's not true now. Now we know the Indians and probably even the Chinese are quite a bit older than we thought. Well, in these cultures, guess what shows up in their things? They got these reptilian thing guys walking around, taking people. They got these gray guys walking around. They've even got little silver saucers, which have been found both in Sumerian and Egyptian texts as well. So even before them, we're seeing this. This has been in our culture a very, very long time. Whoever these guys are very patient. They're very methodical. They're taking their time. You know, I imagine for them, you know, 50, 60,000 years is probably just about a week to us. It seems like they have very long lifespans, and they seem to be very, very patient in what they're doing. And I don't think anything that we're going to do anytime soon is going to deter any of this from happening. The government is fully and functionally aware of it. They've even admitted to it on more than one occasion. They've had five major projects researching this. And I always thought Project Blue Book was the funniest because everybody said Project Blue Book proves no aliens. No, that's not what Project Blue Book said. Project Blue Book said there were 86 completely and totally unexplained, no way to explain them but the way the witness said cases out of 700. So even they
and that was just out of a small grouping of sightings.
Yeah, they did 760 cases, and that's how many cases they could not explain at all. And some of the other cases, let me tell you, they were stretching for explanations. So even they knew there was something on. Now, this is another funny thing. In the 40s, when the Foo Fighters were following around, our governments, not just our governments, remember, pilots from 9 different air forces, Allied and Axis, reported seeing Foo Fighters. Now, it's funny today, 6 years later, we still can't replicate that technology. Still to this day, even some of the pilots that are still alive today are even amazed because even as advanced as we have become in the last 60 years with drones and all kind of stuff, we still cannot reproduce this type of technology.
And for our listening audience, Joe, can you explain the Foo Fighters of World War II, please?
The Foo Fighters had started being reported. The U.S. had gone into the Pacific and had started going overseas. And a lot of our bombers were being tagged by white and green lights. At first, they thought they were like the Germans or the Japanese, you know, shadowing the planes. Then the lights would approach a plane, usually the size of like a small Volkswagen, and then they would start like ringing around a plane, ringing around wings while the plane was in flight. And then they would just dart off and disappear, and then they would come back and they'd dart. This went on, and guys, this is what's so weird about this. This was not like it happened every few missions. Almost every mission, they were being seen. They basically were following our bombers to their targets and watching what was going on. They never interfered. They never knocked anybody out of the sky, as far as I know. But literally, I think altogether, there was more than 1,700 reports by different pilots and different aircraft crews. There was no doubt. And pilots are great. I mean, especially bombers. They pay a good bit of attention to detail, so it's not like they were fantasizing or making these up. You know, there was even pictures taken on a couple of occasions. This is a technology that far exceeds anything today, and we didn't find out till after the war was over that the Germans, the Russians, and the Japanese were seeing them as well. So it wasn't the Allies, it wasn't us, you know, there was someone else there watching. And when you got that many pilots, it's almost, and then some of these guys were captains. You've even had a couple full-bird colonels come forward. I mean, this is putting their careers and their pensions on the line, to say something.
Joe, let me ask you, what are your thoughts on all of the new History Channel alien shows that are coming out? Do you think they're doing a fair or decent job of presenting the facts as ufologists see them?
Well, I got to say, some of the shows seem to do a fairly decent job. The problem with any UFO show is there's finite material here. So, you know, you can do maybe a year, maybe 2 years of good shows on really good cases and hard-hitting evidence. But after that, you're kind of fishing. So what happens is they start, oh, let's speculate about this in the past. Let's speculate. And they start speculating all over the place. And that is not a good thing because it's not sticking to the evidence, and it's simply, you know, it plants a lot of bad ideas in a lot of people's heads on how things are working, and it's something that
although
the show
some of the speculation sounds pretty reasonable. I mean, I have
well, no,
to,
some of it is, no, some yeah. of it is, and some of it's not bad, and some of the shows do a good job on speculate, and occasionally, you know, I watch ancient astronauts from time to time, and most of the shows I've seen there have been quite good. I can't really say that I've seen any really bad shows, and they seem to stick pretty much to the information. But then I've seen both UFO Hunters on History and the UFO other one on Sci-Fi, and they were both just terrible. I mean, they were exaggerating things.
I do agree with you on that. You know, some of it is just like, you know, very sensational and melodramatic and. You know, it's very interesting to watch that.
Because in ufology's case, not all advertisement is good stuff. So it's just a matter of, you know, there's a lot of good information out there. And it's just a matter of finding the people who really do it. I mean, we do sightings and abduction research and ancient history because the three have to go together. You know, we try to stay out of the politics and religion as much as possible. But unfortunately, there's too many ties in those areas, like Milab cases and stuff like that. So, and see, that's another thing, and most Americans don't realize this. For that matter, most people on the planet don't realize this. There's a government out there, and I don't want to use government because they're not a government. They're a group that do Milabs. They actually, when people are being taken and put back, they actually come and take these people from time to time. And the reason they are, they're just like everybody else. They want to know, well, why are the aliens taking you? Why are they interested in you? What is it that you're learning? Are you empathic, telepathic? Have you seen any technologies? The government's very interested in this stuff because most people don't even realize that the Air Force and the Navy both have official telepathy programs, official, funded by the government. Even in this crappy economy, we're funding telepathic abilities, which is a good and a bad thing. I mean, you know, we could use that money other places, but if they're real, then it's a good thing. But the government's been doing this for at least 4 decades.
Remote viewing has been going on for how many years now?
Well, they closed down remote viewing, and that's why they went the other way.
You know, I've heard different. I've heard
Though. Well, I'll tell you what happened. Remote viewing, I've interviewed several remote viewers over the years. What happens is here, this is a good example. This is a remote viewer. If there's a card on the desk, he can tell you that there's a card on the desk, but he's not going to be able to tell you what's on the card. But someone who has true telepathy can actually access the person that's in the room and look through their eyes and tell you exactly what's on the card. Mm. So the government has gone for a much more sophisticated form of data. Remote viewing was cool, and they did use it, and it did work, ladies and gentlemen. There's lots of proof that this really worked. The government funded it for 30 years. And they could tell you, you know, the remote viewers could tell you that the Russians had a base in this location, which is great for us. But someone who does telepathy could actually get in the colonel's head that's walking in the base and see the codes that he's punching in a whole nine yards. So that's a much more sophisticated form of technology. And it is something our government is very, very interested in. Empathic abilities have been around for centuries. We've been knowing about them for centuries, all throughout the ancients, the oracles, Delphi. I mean, you know, oh, what's his name? Notre Dame, for some reason, slipped my mind. But there's several others besides that. There have been some really good oracles in our society over the years. So the abilities are real. But to what extent, how good, and how far evolved are we on these abilities? Because you know as well as I do, if we were all telepathic, this would be a much different world. Because there'd be way less lying to start off with. and there'd be way
well,
more, there'd be way less
that
of that. You know, like when you're talking to somebody and you're going, yeah, you're thinking, you dummy, why don't you just shut up? Well, I won't be no more of that either. So, you know, it would be a much different place. I think it would be a better place, but it would be a much different place.
You mean you would hear me in the background thinking, oh, my goodness, I'm tired tonight?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. You know, we'd all have those, whatever your surface thoughts are is what they say you pick up fastest. So I'm thinking that's kind of the things that most people would pick. Now, if somebody was really looking in your head, they might find something deeper. But it's one of those things that we're all kind of like, hey, you know. We as growing up as kids, we're all taught that these things are real, but we don't really want to talk about it because it's not politically correct, which is a very dirty word in today's society. But
amen.
You know, if that's
so
how
amen,
we feel.
By the way, I just remembered that.
Well, you know, I stay out of politics as much as I can, except when I'm on Saturday nights now, because I've been guest hosting. Well, I've been hosting, co-hosting. Sorry, news on the flip side, which gets me in trouble. But I needed some stress relief.
So, and you went to politics, Joe?
Well, it's not all politics. It is right now, actually, Basma. It's politics right now because we're so close to this moronic election
exactly.
We're having.
Exactly.
But after that, it won't be politics.
It's about time.
We've been campaigning
for 3 years now.
Yes, I know, and I'm just ready for something, anything. At this point, you know, somebody asked me the other day, I said, look, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. I said, I talk about it on Saturdays. Come see me then, because I told my co-host the other day, she's a good friend of mine, once we're done, once whoever wins this nightmare they call an election is over with, you know, we're moving on to something else. I don't care what it is. Well, we were doing some good shows like on abortion and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we even got picked up. We got AP picked us up and carried the abortion show. I think it got picked up on like 118, 119 different stations and stuff. So it was very nice. But You know, I do actually think about other things than UFOs sometimes. Not often, people. I have to be honest with you.
Well, I know that your show has to do with a lot of paranormal research as well. So, and I'll tell you what, perhaps we can get into a little bit of that right after our break. This is Basma Farhat with the People Speak Radio. And our interview tonight is with Joe Montalo, who is with ICAR. I'm not good with acronyms, Joe. Go for it.
Oh, it's the International Community for Alien Research at www.icar1.com. Well, I sound just like a commercial, but
Exactly. And we do have some questions from our listening audience that we will get to as soon as we come back. Thank you, and we'll be back in a minute.
Master flute maker Ken Light believes everyone needs a flute. And now for just $70 plus shipping, you can own the PF Flute, a precise replica of Ken's beautiful cedar flutes that sell for hundreds of dollars. Made of ABS resin plastic, the PF Flute is waterproof and virtually indestructible, and so perfectly tuned that legendary Native American flutist R.C. Nakai uses them in his concert performances and recordings. The PF flute is actually two flutes in one because it can be easily changed between G minor and F sharp minor by changing the body tubes. It breaks down to fit into a 17-inch long drawstring cloth bag. Included are playing instructions and fingering guide. Best of all, it is very easy to play, and with very little practice, you will be making your own music. For more information and to order the PF flute and other flutes and accessories, please visit aoflutes.com.
This land is your land. This land is my.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests from various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, here on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio on BBS Radio. I am with Joe Montalo, and Joe is one of the leading experts in ufology today, as well as a lot of paranormal stuff. But before we go on to that, Joe, we do have a couple of questions in the UFO area, and I would like to ask them from our listeners. One is from Mike in California. And Mike asks, I'm a fan of Dr. Michio Kaku, who claims that extraterrestrial civilizations may fall into class 1, 2, or 3, and that we are at the class level 0 and probably headed towards self-extinctions. When are the aliens going to intervene and save us from ourselves? That's a good question, Mike.
Well, you know, I've interviewed Kaku twice now. He's a very great interview, and we've actually discussed this in great detail. Yeah, you'd be amazed. He actually likes to discuss this topic. And he doesn't think we're going to self-destruct. He does think we need some serious guidance, and I have to agree with him on that. But the thing of it is I don't think they are going to intervene. If you look at our history, they darted in and out from time to time. You'll see the Sumerians talk about it, the Indians talk about it, the Chinese, you know, pretty much every ancient culture. You're going to find some mention of the Greys or the reptilians or the human-type aliens. I mean, they're just all over in our culture. So I don't think they – I don't think – for them it's different because I don't think they think we're going to ever totally wipe ourselves out. So for them it's like a reset. Let's say – some crazy reason the U.S., China, and Russia get into a big major war and we go nuke happy and nuke 88% of the planet. They have the ability to clean up the planet. So they would probably put something in perspective to clean up the planet, but not to clean up us. That would be left up to our own means. I don't think they're going to interfere to that point until we can show them a level of consciousness far beyond where we are today. I mean, bottom line is you're not going to go out of your way to save a pile of ants in Africa because they're just a pile of ants. And they really, you know, on the grand scheme of evolution, we're not that much further up the evolution scale than that to them. It's just anybody whose consciousness is going to live more than a couple of thousand years is really going to be in a plane of existence that we're just not going to be able to understand. Humans are very limited in our intellect, and we're very limited in our growth at this time. It's not to say that 10,000, 100,000, 100 million years from now, we won't be almost godlike. We may be, but we're not right now. So in their point of view, is it worth saving? They're more interested, if they're going to save anything, it'll be the planet. And as many contactees have told me, they're not worried about the planet because the planet can save itself. You know, everybody always says, oh, we're going to destroy the world. No, we're going to destroy ourselves. That's the real difference. The world will go on whether we wipe ourselves out or not. And something else will evolve. Remember, man is the third evolution on this planet, not the first. And I haven't seen where they've intervened in any of those other ones, so I don't think they're going to actually intervene here. I think it's survival of the fittest, and we're not quite there yet.
Well, that which kind of is scary anymore with everything that's going on. But anyway, Dave in Canada, is Joe familiar with Eisenhower's alleged meetings with aliens and his agreement to cooperate with them?
I am quite familiar with him. I remember the first report I had read because it said he was on his way to a dentist. And he showed up at a base in Washington State. Now, what's interesting about this is there is some documentation to go along with these claims. There are some paperwork that does show that he was where they said he was, that he was not at the dentist, that he was in Washington. And there's a couple other occasions where he said he was one place, but the document said he was somewhere else. Now, as far as was he meeting with aliens, I don't know. I wasn't there. I would think he was because there was no real reason for him to lie about traveling anywhere around the U.S. I mean, a trip to Washington, a military base in Washington State for president is no big deal. I mean, they do it all the time. They can go up there and say he's going to go say hi to such and such. But there would be no reason to cover it up unless he was meeting. Now, the other part to this story is there are about half a dozen GIs that came forward and talked about a saucer coming down and landing on the edge of the runway, then hovering down the runway, landing, and the aliens got out and then were proceeded. They all walked into a hangar and they all met in a hangar. Now, since then, I haven't talked with the six witnesses to it. I only read the count. I'm not even sure if any of them are alive anymore. But I had talked to two of the colonels that said they were present at the time. And they they didn't see the saucer land, but they did see the aliens. So they do back up the story. But both these guys, too, are I think one is 87 and one is 92. So I don't even know how much longer they're going to be around. It's like the Roswell case. I mean, most of the witnesses are dead now. I mean, what's going to happen to a lot of this evidence is simply everybody who was involved is going to die, and there's not going to really be anything else you can do with them.
What are your thoughts on Roswell?
Roswell always gets in trouble. It's like, Roswell always gets me in trouble.
Spots
just like
they say is.
Actually, I think what happened there is I think we recovered something from Germany. We were flying the damn thing. Maybe the aliens were on board when we were flying it, but we were flying the damn thing and crashed it. You got to remember, they said there were six saucers recovered from Germany, and there are pictures of these saucers. Matter of fact, it was a prototype of one in one of our museums. I think it was a Smithsonian. It had guns on them, all kind of stuff, but they were saucers that the Germans had worked on from 1911 to 1913, prototypes. They think they brought one of those back that may have been built by a Gray or something, and either the Grays were trying to help them ride or somebody was, and they crashed it. And the reason why we say that is there was two sets of bodies they said they were found. They said there was a set of bodies found at the initial site, which looked like humanish looking but kind of reddish. Like, the way they described it would sound like a human that had been exposed to a lot of radiation, a lot. Like a serious overdose of radiation. The other one was a smaller craft, and the bodies were found intact. Matter of fact, one of the aliens was still alive. What they think happened was the ship was coming down. The actual Grays left in an escape pod. The ship crashed, the humans died, and then the pod came down and crashed. Now, look, that is sheer speculation, by the way. It's just a theory of progress. I should say a theory in progress, but there's a lot of evidence to suggest that's what went down. I can't see my point here is as the United States, we wouldn't let someone keep our planes. Even when that plane crashed in China, we told China, you got to give us the plane back or we're going to have to go to war with you. Even though they sent it back in pieces in a box, they still sent it back. Okay, I cannot see an advanced alien race leaving us have one of their craft when they could come take it. So the only way we would have possession of such a craft is if they wanted us to have it. Or was something we built and they were helping us with it. But I can't just say, you know, oh, well, we took one of their craft and we kept it and they didn't care. No, I'm not going to even buy that a little bit. So I really do think Roswell was quite a bit different than what we were told. That's just one of those things.
Well, let me ask you another question I think that is of interest to a lot of people, even our board operator, Seth. Hey, Seth. The Millennium Group and the Raelians, all of these organizations are, or belief systems or religions or whatever they have chosen to call themselves individually or independently, how does that play into what's happening? Are there groups in the world that are actually in contact with aliens or extraterrestrials? And are, we'll look at Scientology. Scientology is based on a concept of the return of the Martians to this world. And I know for a fact that so is the Masonic Order. They believe that Martians are coming back any day. What about all of these groups? Where is there any truth or non-truth in this?
Well, what's interesting about that, there is about a dozen groups on the planet. Some of them that date back almost 2,000 years that believe that aliens created us and put us here and they would come back. Now, these are awful advanced beliefs for someone 2,000 years ago, and it's fairly advanced beliefs for today. What they base them on is any good thing. Is any in contact? Yeah, I would imagine a couple of the groups probably, if they've gathered enough contactees or they're like an organization like us that has a way to get hold to a lot of them, well, yeah, then it's like having a key to the car, because not only do you know where the aliens are a lot of the times, you know a lot of what they're doing because you're in contact with a lot of people they're doing it with. And see, with ICAR, it's not just that we're connected with contactees anymore. We're connected with people that work in a lot of the black ops projects, and we've met a lot of people in the government over the years that want to talk about it. They just don't want their names mentioned. And see, but I'll tell you, that's another difference between us and MUFON. I do not use that as evidence. You ever hear me talk about one of our witnesses or something like that, you'll hear me say it just like that. I'll be like, well, this guy works for the government, and this is what he's telling us. But remember, he does work for the government. So I'm always giving everybody with a grain of salt. But no, a lot of these groups are like that, and a lot of these groups have become cultish, like the Millennium Group and the Raelians have become almost cultish in the way they do things, which is a little on the scary side, because they're big groups. They're not small groups, 50, 60, 70,000 people. These are not small groups, and these are groups that tend to draw, you know, middle class and upper middle class. So there's actually quite a bit of money involved for whatever attraction there is. I don't know what the attraction is, but there is. It's like what I was telling you about the big group. There was, last I heard, there was 65,000 people sitting at the bottom of this mountain in France, waiting for this UFO to come out the mountain this year. I guess it's going to come out on 12/21/12. So they're all like, France has gotten so bad. I mean, they're like building a town here now. They've just come.
Well,
they
built a town in St. Petersburg, Florida, for the Scientologist community, and I think something like that is going on down there too.
Yeah, it is, and well, there's a lot of that going on, and you know, there, what it is, it's a scramble to be who's going to be the first one that meets ET, who's going to be the one that brings him forward. Which group is it going to be? I hate to break all their little hearts. When ET's ready to show itself, they'll just show themselves. It's not going to be. Well, somebody tell me all the time, is there going to be disclosure? There already has been disclosure. Let me explain to you, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. The governments know, okay? And the contactees know. The ET don't care that everybody else doesn't know, because what they're doing has nothing to do with them. Yeah. So the people that need to know already know. That kind of worries me, in the fact that they think of everybody else on this planet as kind of second-class citizens. It bothers me a lot, because when you know, regardless if you're willing to be a contactee or not, or willing to be taken by an alien or not, they don't ask. So any way you look at this, they're taking people against their will. Even if you're saying it's okay, somewhere along the line, they were taking you against your will. And I just, you know, I judge everything by its actions, and aliens are the same way. And when you're taking people against your will, it's still not a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah, you know, so I have X amount of problems with that.
Let me ask you, the difference between grays and reptilians, you know, for the longest time, and I'll be honest with you, as a young person, one of the things that I always said was, if I ever disappeared off the face of the earth, it would have been because an alien spacecraft landed in my backyard, and I walked out butt naked and barefoot straight into that aircraft, and you know, just at the opportunity to see what was there. And now, as I've done research, as I've listened to researchers such as yourself, I'm not so sure that's a good idea.
Well, it depends who it is, where you're going, and what they're going to do with you.
Exactly. But I won't
there's
know.
There's so many reports. Yeah, and see, that's the thing. You don't know until you get there, and that's the bad thing. I mean, there's a big movement right there that, you know, a lot of these contactees tell you they're leading to lies. Because especially with the grays, they have the ability to take you out of time and space. So you're not really aging or moving. You may spend 3, 4, 5 weeks with them. When they put you back, it's been like 10 minutes here. And, you know, a lot of people can't, and it does create a lot of stress on them because, you know, this is, wow, wherever, what, you know, all this other stuff's built up in their heads. Occasionally ET messes up. Like, we had dinner with a couple in Pensacola, Florida a few years back. And we went to go talk to them about them being contacted. And what was funny about this is someone came around from the table and asked if we'd like to have our picture taken. Just coincidental, so the four of us got together, stood up, and she was wearing a dress, you know, it stopped about knee high. He was a nice little tie and clean cut and all. And, you know, I was dressed in a suit. My wife was in a pantsuit. And they took a picture. Next morning, I get a phone call. I'm still in Pensacola. I spent the night. So I said, what's up? Joe, you got to come by my house. You're not going to blankety-blanky believe this. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, they took us. I said, okay, I believe you. He said, no, you're not going to believe this. I get to the house, right? This woman has hair on her legs thicker than I have on my face, and I have a big, healthy beard. Big, hairy underarms. This guy's wearing like a Grizzly Adams 8-10-week beard. Now, we took a picture because the night before, you know, and it was real. I mean, we were tugging on it, pulling it on the camera while we're tugging on it and stuff. There's no accounting for that. They got taken. Now, under regression, there are several weeks of information in their head, but I had just seen them at dinner that night. So, you know, those are hard to get. Well, here's one your audience is going to love, this one. And y'all could try to explain this one away all day long, but this is a fact, and this was well investigated by the police in both Los Angeles and in New York. A lady wakes up in New York City and commences to beating the crap out of what should have been her husband laying next to her, right? She's in bed with some guy she doesn't know in New York City. Now, this woman lives in Los Angeles, California, okay? Now, so she's screaming, hollering. The guy's like, calm down, calm down, because the guy don't know who the hell she is. And he's wondering where his wife is, by the way. So he finally gets to calm down. She picks up the phone. She calls home. And it's like 7 in the morning in New York, which means it's about 3, 4 a.m. L.A. time, or 5 a.m. She calls, and a woman answers the phone. And she instantly starts screaming. So the guy woke up. He realizes this is not his wife. They actually put the women home in the wrong houses, in the wrong state. Now, they checked aircraft. And wait, now they can prove that both women were at work that afternoon. They could prove that both women went to the house. They couldn't find any flights or any video where these women had taken any planes or any trains or anything. They were just simply in the wrong states.
Isn't that fascinating?
And all four of them, matter of fact, have been polygraphed, and all of them passed. They don't know each other from anywhere, anyhow. They're all good friends now, by the way, but they weren't then. There's no explaining that away. I mean, there's just no way to explain that away. It's one of those events, and, you know, they just mess up every once in a while.
I tell you, there was my first experience. And no matter what we say, I think that there's a cognitive dissonance that happens within us that protects us from the full totality of reality. And when I went to the MUFON convention that was held here in Dearborn, Michigan a few years ago, you know, Joe, I couldn't make it past an hour in there. I was so overwhelmed. I was so overwhelmed by the reality of it, by the normalcy of the people there, by the caliber and intellect that I was witnessing. And these people all had experience with ET, either by or of one form or another. And to be quite honest with you, the truth of it overwhelmed me so much that I was in tears and I left. I couldn't deal with it. Is that something that you could it be that's why we are so so regress in trying to understand it?
Well, I'm sure it's got part of the do it. Well, I'm sure it does have part to do with it. You know, one of the things we look for, matter of fact, this is abduction criteria, is all contactees or abductees, whatever you want to label them, are empathic. It's a must. We won't even talk to someone if they're not. because it means, you know, it's either, we don't know if it's a gift from the ET or if it's something ET looks for, if it's something from contact that just happened over the decades. But all contactees are very empathic. A lot of them are telepathic. A lot of them even show clairvoyance, or telekinesis. But all of them are empathic, and it's not that hard to figure out, because I have watched contactees walk into a room of people and watch the whole room immediately change. We've done these experiments many times, make one really happy or one really sad and send them into a room. The room instantly gets into whatever mood that person happens to be in. We've also seen the reverse, where a contactee that's untrained or doesn't know they're empathic walks into a room where there's a high amount of emotion, whether it's the people in it or something left behind in the room, and they pick it up immediately. That's why some contactees, they don't understand why they'll be happy as a lamb and all of a sudden they're sitting there bawling their eyes out, or they're bawling their eyes out and all of a sudden they're happy as a lamb. It's hard on those people because they don't really understand what's going on, and they're going to shrinks, and the shrinks are telling them this and putting them on this drug and telling them that, and it's not helping. And then they come see us and we tell them what it is, and within a month you see a marked improvement. Usually within a year or two you've seen a whole new person. They've got new careers, they've changed their lives, they've moved on, they've got all kind of stuff going on. It is amazing to see the difference.
Well, this whole conversation has been amazing, and of course, you're so informative as always, Joe. For those of you, can you give me your website again, Joe? For those
guys, www.icar1.com.
And tune in. He's the guy with in the know. Thank you for being with us tonight, Joe. Our next week's guest is going to be Rabbi Yosriel Weiss, who speaks for the Natura Carta, who has met with Iran's Ahmadinejad. We look forward to seeing you next week. And it's been swell, folks. Until then, let the people speak.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of us, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.